clients always have a wandering eye. They're loyal to you until they're not. They're loyal to you until the next best thing comes along. And it's not personal, it's just business. And so staying front of mind with your guests is how you show that amenity between guest visits.
Hi, I'm Neil Malik.
Hey, I'm Jenny Strebe.
Steve Sleeper from the Professional Beauty Association.
Hi, I'm Philip Wolf, and you're listening to the Hair Game Podcast.
Hey, listener, I'm your host, Eric Taylor. Let's get straight to the Podloop giveaway. We're giving away Britt Stevens' Thriver Society Prep School course, plus a $100 Amazon gift card. The winner is Hello Ashley K. Hello Ashley K. DM me at the Hair Game Podcast on Instagram. Let me know that you heard me call your name, and we will send you Britt's Thriver Society Prep School course. At the end of the show, I'll tell you what we will give away next week and how you can win that. Okay, we're back with Britt. Thank you so much for last week. We talked a lot about your story, your beginnings, your experience running your salon there in Northern California. You've really built a tremendous foundation of experience, and now you've created Thriver Society, which is your way of sharing that with the community. And I do believe that it's helped so many members of the beauty community over the years. So that's why you're on. So here we are with episode 2. We left off last week with talking about the podcast. And the very last thing we talked about was maybe the element of human nature where we feel really good and productive learning things, whether it's going to a hair show or listening to a podcast or reading a book or whatever. And then we're not so good at implementing those things into our lives so that we actually get the benefit from it. What do you say to those people who are chronic learners and not executors?
Oh my goodness, I really love this question. I have so much advice because I used to be that person. It's so easy to get sucked into that. So I have this theory about input and output, that we as human beings are in a constant cycle of input and output, and the input feels really great. It's what we do to fill our brains, fill our hearts, fill our souls, fill our mind. I mean, all of it. The output is the hard stuff. And so it's natural instinct. Can't even blame you that it's way more fun to listen to this podcast. It's way more fun to go to a hair show. Exactly what you said. All of that is great because it feels good. It gives us a rush. It makes us feel like we're doing good for our business. The good actually doesn't happen until the output comes. And that's the hardest part, is because the output doesn't feel as great. The input gives you this mental high. It feels so good. But until you output and actually start seeing the results, it is this high that can't be sustained. You can listen, you can learn, you can travel, you can take as many workshops as you want to. It will be an insatiable need to fill until you actually start the output work. And it's like creating a new habit, but once you start creating output habit, that actually becomes the new rush. So for me, output habit looks like this. I can only hold so much in my heart, in my mind, everything. There's only so much my brain can store. Like, Eric, you've done this too. We go on a binge, like you're traveling, and you read a book and you listen to 10 podcasts. Of all of that information, how much did you absorb? Maybe 10% at best. Mm-hmm. And 90% is gone. It's just gone forever. Unless we actually take some time to slow down. Like, my advice would be to listen to this podcast that we're doing here twice. Listen to last week's and this week's twice. The first time, listen to just binge out and enjoy. The second time, listen with intention and take notes. And listen, I know this to some people, this sounds crazy. Like, why listen to podcasts in my car? Why would I take notes? This is what I call a micro learning. Like, Eric and I are serving it up, and we're going to give you practical tips and advice if you are down to listen. Like, this is a free training class. See it as such. Like, imagine you paid $1,000 to listen to this podcast. How are you going to show up for it? That's how you should show up every time you learn. Then, once you've actually taken actionable notes on whatever training you're going to, workshop you've been at, podcast you listen to, whatever, you need to choose 2 to 3 action items and execute on those action items before you allow yourself to do any more input. And that's the habit, is you can't just be an education junkie. You have to actually do the work. And it's like a little test for yourself to be like, okay, I know you want to take that workshop in 2 weeks, but have you taken action on the book that you read last week? Because if not, you're not allowed to go. So might as well well just take the action, start to see that progress, and then allow yourself to consume more. You can only store so much. So unless you're creating healthy output, the output is going to show up in the form of stress, overwhelm, confusion, and then ultimately you'll want to take a B word, which is a break from your business because you feel like you're overwhelmed by the to-do list, by the things you could be, should be doing versus just having that healthy balance.
Absolutely. And by the way, I am prone to doing this too. I am so prone to doing this. I go through so many audiobooks. I listen to a lot of different podcasts. And so I'm getting that input, yeah, tremendous flood of input, and only now and then, not enough, only now and then do I stop in the middle of, let's say, an audiobook, and I write a note, and then I usually email it to myself, and then I don't go back and look at that email. With on the email is the thought of, oh my gosh, this is such a good idea. I need to implement this in my business or in my family or in my parenting with my two kids or whatever, right? And then I don't go back and look at the email. So what good is it that I spent all that time reading the book?
Nailed it. And listen, I'm talking a good game and I'm like sharing this great advice. I'm still learning that habit for sure. Okay, here's something that I adopted this year, Eric. With the exception of, I'm reading a few books on allyship and acceptance, but with the exception of that, I am only reading books I've already read this year. I'm only listening to audiobooks I've already listened to. Yes. I am going, oh, don't you love that? I'm going back and that. Like, redoing everything where I know there was work left to be done. I'm taking this year to like double down on that. You know how it is. I've listened to some amazing books. I've read some great things. Now it's time to like do the work and put it to practice.
I mean, I almost feel like I don't need to learn. I don't need to learn more. I've learned enough out there. I just, yep. I need to do that output. It's almost like, you know, talking about an extreme analogy. Let's say you really want to get in better shape, right? So you read 47 books on how to work out, but you never actually go and lift a weight.
Yes, right? Yes.
That's what exactly. It is.
That's right.
And so I've been thinking about, my favorite book is Good to Great by Jim Collins.
One. Yep.
And I just absolutely adore this book. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they mentioned something in that book, and I didn't remember it. And I thought, how could I not remember that part of that book? And it's my favorite book. And so I've been thinking for literally like a year that I need to go back and read and reread that book. But it just seems so stupid to go back and spend all my time reading the same book that I read. But I have to do that.
Same. My favorite book is The One Thing by Gary Keller. And same, like somebody will quote something and I'll say, I don't remember that he taught that. But if instead of, you and I are probably wired the same way, we want to read 20 books a year. If instead of doing that, we just pick a handful and become masters, yes, of that education and method, we'd be 10 times better off.
Using the output. And it's the same way I feel about the news, by the way. You know, yep. The news, when I listen to, most of the news that I listen to is financial type news. And it's just that within 2 minutes, they've given me 15 things, each one of which I would like to dig into a little bit deeper. But how do you process, like, how do you get productive output out of all of that input? It's difficult.
It is difficult. And I try and make note of like the questions that come up for me. I was talking about this on my own podcast actually recently, where often just like starting the new habit or creating traction is the hardest part. But once you create the traction, it becomes 1,000 times easier. And I'm trying to become more acutely aware to like the questions that come up for me. So if I was to listen to a financial training, I'll say, oh, what part of that don't I understand? And then I chase that gap of like, okay, I didn't understand when they were talking about, I don't know, compound interest or whatever it was. So now I need to be a student of that. And I try and like listen to and respect those rabbit holes to a degree, yeah, and fill in the blanks there. But I mean, it's tough. It is truly habit, truly habit.
Okay. So hopefully as we produce this content for people to take in, they can, all of you listeners, we're watching. We're going to expect you to take this information and then output it. And that, of course, is when you actually receive all the benefit of this information. Let's talk about something that you mentioned at the end of last week's episode. You talked about consumer changes in 2020, now 2021. What are the biggest consumer changes that you've seen coming out of this pandemic?
Massive. So we had all gotten caught up in a really fast-paced life before the pandemic hit. All of us, we were all guilty of it. And it became efficiency, getting people in, getting people out, finding fast answers, showing up big, being an influencer, big, massive following. It was more quantity over quality. Well, 2020 taught us a lot of lessons. And as the way good lessons are taught, we didn't see them coming. There was a lot of things that blindsided stylists as a whole. So I took 2020, again, to what we were saying, to be a listener. And I wanted to be as on the ground as I could, listening to stylists and salon owners about their struggles, their challenges, what they're hearing from clients. And we saw a lot of stylists who lost clients who kind of flipped the script, where it was like, oh my gosh, you were like my favorite client, and now you're straight up mean. Like, I don't know what happened. It's like the relationship changed in an instant, and it felt so unexpected. And what happened there, in my opinion, is that consumer behavior changed, and it changed really rapidly. And we couldn't have planned for it. It just is one of those things that happens sometimes. Our clients wanted us to show up in a very deep human connection way to them. So, and I empathize, because I know for a lot of us as stylists and salon owners, the idea of, okay, you need to do a handwritten note to all of your guests. You need to check in with each guest personally. You need to be super hands-on with your clientele. Meanwhile, stylists and salon owners are like trying to keep the lights on. I fully understand, like, that was a huge ask, but that's what clients wanted. They didn't want to just check into your Instagram for updates. They didn't want to just get an email or a text to be like, hey, we're shut down, I'll keep you posted. They truly expected their stylist to be very hands-on during these shutdowns, and it was something that was a bit of a blindside. And the reality is that now consumer trust has changed. And what we used to be able to do is welcome clients into the salon and offer a glass of champagne, and it was really fun and splashy, and you had 100,000 followers, so that was cool. And it's still cool. It's fine. I'm not saying it's bad. But what I'm saying is what clients are looking for today has changed. And they're looking for personalized attention. They're looking to feel prioritized before they even walk into the salon. And what I'm calling the new guest amenities, we used to call guest amenities things like champagne, cupcakes, you know, in salon conditioning treatments for free, or whatever it was that you did to make your guest feel special. The new amenities that clients are looking for is the magic that happens between guest visits. And that's the part that I don't think that we saw coming. I don't know that we could have predicted it. But because consumers coming out of post-pandemic, they are now even more particular than ever before about where they spend money, who they want to connect with, who they're going to refer to. Oh my gosh, that game has changed dramatically too. And what it looks like to be loyal. And they expect the loyalty to go both ways. So I think for a lot of us, we thought, you know, I'll show up, I'll do good hair, I'll be kind to my clients, I'll show up on social, and they'll be loyal to me. Well, no, they want the loyalty to go both ways. And so we are being forced into kind of a high touch environment again. And to be honest, I don't hate it. I think that the push back to human connection and almost old school marketing, I think it's about time, like, to slow down and kind of get out of the machine mentality and reconnect as human beings again. That's the biggest trend that I'm seeing.
So to build that human connection and to do those things that you're talking about in between appointments, what specifically are you talking about?
Good question. And when I talk about this, it can feel a little bit overwhelming. And so I'm going to try and walk into it with, like, baby steps, because it can start off really small and simple, and then you can get more in depth. So it used to be cool that, like, you would see your clients every 6 weeks, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it was, depending on their frequency. You see them when you do, they follow you on social, you know, comment on their feed from time to time. That was cool. Now they want more. So clients want to feel like you're thinking about them even when they're not with you, because the reality is clients always have a wandering eye. They're loyal to you until they're not. They're loyal to you until the next best thing comes along. And it's not personal, it's just business. And so staying front of mind with your guests is how you show that amenity between guest visits. So one way to do it, simple way to do it, is that you can be, here's a good way to use social media effectively. Scrolling your feed, you see a picture of a great haircut. Doesn't even have to be one that you did. It could be a haircut on a celebrity, a color on somebody else, doesn't matter. Send that picture, send that post to a client of yours via DM. Hey, Sheila, I saw this new haircut and I feel like this would be amazing on you. Thinking of you, looking forward to seeing you in a couple of months. You're not just client number 47. You matter to me and I'm thinking about you all the time. We have to start doing the things that other stylists and salon owners maybe aren't willing to do, but our clients want to feel like they're not just a part of the machine, that they are valued in our lives. Which the tricky part on this is that I know a lot of stylists are like, you know, my clients are my friends, and I get it, but 2020 taught us that your clients care for you. There's a good relationship there. Most of them aren't really your friends. It's a professional working relationship. And in that realization, we have to know that we can't take their relationship for granted. It has to be nurtured. There has to be conversation happening consistently. Social media DMs is one good way to do it. I've been coaching to physical mailing since back in 2009. I think dropping a letter in the mailbox to your guests is one of the most impactful things to do. And I'm not talking about a thank you note. I'm talking about, hey, I know it's your daughter's birthday this week. Sending you both my love. Can't wait to see you in the salon soon. How many stylists do that? That's none. And that's the kind of stuff that gets you referrals, and it costs you less than a dollar. I mean, that is what I'm talking about. You have to go that little bit of an extra mile to win the marathon. To me, that's what excellent communication, relationship, and marketing looks like today.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea of the screenshotting the picture and sending it to Sheila. And Sheila's like, oh my gosh, my hairdresser's thinking about me. That's amazing. No hairdresser has ever done this to me before. And I was thinking about going to my friend Janice's hairdresser because I liked Janice's haircut last week. But now, geez, maybe I shouldn't do that because I'm unlikely to get the same level of service. And of course, the hairdressers listening right now are like, wait a second. You're asking me to send 200 pictures, you know, but I think the reality is that if there's a certain great haircut, that haircut would probably look good on, I don't know, 20 of your clients. So why not send the same picture to 20 of the clients saying the same thing?
You nailed it. Oh, you nailed it. And that's the thing is like, I call this micro marketing, which is macro marketing is at scale, right? You post on Instagram, you do the hashtags, whatever. That's macro marketing. Micro marketing is much more high touch. And to what you're saying, you can still do it at scale. The same haircut, the quote that you found that you feel like 50 of your clients are going to resonate with. You can do this at scale. It doesn't have to be this huge, heavy thing. It's that little touch of, hey, I'm thinking of you. Can't wait to see you. That's all that it takes.
Yeah. And also for the listeners, they're probably thinking, you know, oh my God, my clients, they're looking all around and there's other hairdressers who are trying to poach my clients. And isn't that horrible? But, you know, you have to be aware enough to recognize that if you're marketing yourself, you are marketing yourself to the general public clients out there who likely have an existing hairstylist.
Exactly right. Every new guest that you receive, generally speaking, 95% of the time had another hairstylist they left to see you. You're exactly right.
Yeah. So a little bit hard to be angry when we're all part of the same operating function. And this is just a natural element of the economy. So best not to be angry at it and just to recognize it and to do your part the best that you can.
Absolutely. And, you know, every guest that walks out of your business for the last time is gifting somebody else new business, great for both parties, and it opens the door and creates space for you to meet somebody who's a better fit for you. Kind of like when we were talking about last week about terminations. Don't think of it as an end or a loss. It's a new opportunity for everybody involved. And if we can shift it to be less about losing and winning and just to be about everybody finding the best possible fit, it doesn't have to become so negative. It can just be all of us building our best clientele and living our best life.
Totally. Okay, so if I read your website correctly, you've got 161 lessons in Thriver Society.
Yeah.
To all focused on helping a hairdresser's business. If you had to name the top five, most important topic. Yes, I asked that question. The five most important, your five favorite children. Yes, to the exclusion of the other 156. What are your five favorite children, your five most important topics for a struggling hairdresser to find success? What would those be?
You got me with this one. This is a really good question. So the program starts with target market and branding. And that's going to be number one for me, only because it is the hardest part. I always tell people, if you can make it through module one, you're going to be seeing stars. Like, it's going to be amazing. You're going to have a great career. Module one is tough because a lot of people think that they've got branding and marketing in the bag. They've got a great logo. They show up great on social media. The name of their salon is perfect. The salon decor is great. That doesn't mean good branding. That doesn't mean that you hit the mark. That doesn't mean that you are doing what you need to do to attract the right clientele. It's actually a lot deeper than that. And so going through that first module of how am I showing up? What is the subconscious message that I'm delivering? What is it that my target market needs to see so that they build trust with me? One of the biggest mistakes I see stylists make is that they're trying to show off how great they are. I'm Sarah and I'm amazing. Awesome, Sarah. You're amazing, and so are all the other stylists in your community. What all of the other stylists in your community are not doing is celebrating their guest and putting the guest first. And if your brand and target market is less about the Sarah show and is more about Denise and Deborah and Nadine and Mark and all of the amazing clients who come in to see you, we are an egocentric society and clients want to feel like they're the star of the show. And when clients start to feel like, oh my gosh, this stylist understands me, knows what I'm looking for, and you start speaking to their pain points, you start showing up with other clients that they really relate to. When it stops being about Sarah showing off how awesome she is and it starts being about, hey girl, I understand your pain points. This is what you've experienced in the past. This is what you've struggled with. You don't know how to flat iron your hair, and this is why. When you start teaching and showing up differently, and the way that you show up in all that you do becomes less about you and more about the people you're trying to serve, game changer. And that's what we talk about in the first module.
Do you get into the whole hero guide element? Because it's, you're talking about the hero guide dynamic. You know, every movie has a hero and a guide, right? Luke Skywalker, he's the hero, but the guide is Yoda, right?
Yes.
And so the client is the hero. The hairdresser is not the hero. The client's the hero. Hairdresser is the guide.
100%. So I'm a big fan of Don Miller and Story Brand. Have you read that book, Story Brand?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one of the big concepts that he talks about. And so I do reference him in his training because I think it is so poignant. That was such a breakthrough for me to be like, wait a minute, we are simply the guide and our job is to let the client win. And it's so easy to put ourselves in the position of being the person on the pillar, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. And it's so much harder to build from that point. You're exactly right. If we can position the client as the hero, it all becomes so much easier.
So I could hear the listeners thinking right now, oh shit, am I doing that? Am I making myself the hero? And they're not sure. Can you give us an example of something that some of us are doing that are kind of making it all about us?
First of all, I think that the way we show up on social media is a huge way that we do it. So if your social media looks like a portfolio of your work, you're doing it. So even though you're featuring your clients, you're like, but I'm showing my clients. But no, you're not. You're creating a digital brag book. This is my work. This is my work. This is my work. That's cool. That's what you've done. That's great. And there does need to be an element of that on there. But when you're making the client the hero, to me, it's things like sharing their stories, sharing their testimonials. How about this one? Sharing photos that include their face, which I know is hard for some of us to do. But instead of the backs of heads, like celebrating who they are, doing posts, this sounds like you're being the star of your own show, but actually when you create posts where you feature yourself and in the caption you're talking about relating to your clients or you're teaching something, it's giving the opportunity for the guests to have a quick win versus it just being like, I'm Britt, I'm a great hairstylist. I'm Britt, I do good balayage. I'm Britt, I know how to do extensions. It's allowing the guests to have micro wins before they even get in to see you is a huge indicator of doing it right. So I would check myself there. The other thing is too, if you talk to any Thriver Society members, a lot of them will tell you like, I was skeptical. Like, who knows if this thing that she teaches even works. They were affirmed when clients started coming in and literally describing their marketing funnel. So the guests will say, oh my gosh, it was the craziest thing because somebody told me about you. I scoped out your Yelp and your Instagram. Then I looked at your website and it felt like you were speaking to me. When your clients start saying, it feels like you're speaking to me, you've nailed it. And what's wild is they will do that. So when you're hitting the mark, clients should be saying, I've never seen anybody like you before. I felt like you deeply understood me in a way that nobody does. And this is before they've even sat in your chair. Mm-hmm. Like that's when you're doing it right.
I love it. I'm glad I asked that question because I think that's the inverse of what everybody was thinking. That they're thinking, oh, well, all of my Instagram feed are my clients, so I'm definitely putting them front and center.
Right.
And I never put myself out there and talk about myself, but it's the exact opposite of what you said. And I think the difference is that it boils down to value. What value are you giving to the person who's looking at your Instagram account? If they're just looking at the back of one of your clients' heads with very little described in the caption that actually values, that is a value to the person, then that doesn't hit the mark.
Exactly. Okay. So like perfect example. So let's say you're like, I'm not ready to photograph my clients' faces. Totally understand. I get it. That's the skill set in and of itself. Got it. So let's say you are just showing the backs of heads. It doesn't mean you can't have a micro win in this. The caption shouldn't say something like loving this buttery blonde. It should say, beach waves can feel complicated. You could do this look in 5 minutes before you head out the door to work in the morning. Here's the steps. And the entire caption is teaching somebody how to create beach waves like the one you did on this client. That's a micro win. That is allowing a guest to be the hero of their own journey. Because now tomorrow they're going to walk out the door feeling themselves. And you're the person who allowed them that transformation from home. It didn't even take you any work. And so it's like teeny tiny shifts where to exactly what you said, you are empowering the guest to be the winner versus just having a brag book. It's just a small shift in the conversation that makes such an impact.
Okay, brilliant. So that was target market. Do you have more to say about target market and branding?
Oh, so much more to say. But if we're shifting to five things,
we're shifting to five things, and so I want to get through all five. So what's number two?
Number two, one of the things I'm passionate about that we dive into in Thrivers is the power of consultation. And consultation is one of those things that we all think we've nailed it. Like, oh, consultation, I got it. There is a real, because people have gotten so good at consultation, like I can remember, you might have a laugh about this, Eric. When I first started in the salon, we actually promoted, we're like, and you get a consultation before your visit, as if that was like a selling point. Like I should hope so. But there was a time when a lot of people didn't do good consultation. Now it's standard. However, because it's become standard, there is a next level to consultation. And one of the things I'm big on is understanding the different learning styles that we were all brought into this planet with. For example, I'm not an auditory learner. So Eric, you can say something to me, it's going to go in one ear and out the other. I can't retain that information. So if I was to have a consultation where all we did was talk, it will likely be a fail. And the unfortunate thing is that is the standard for consultation. The stylist asks questions, the client answers the questions, and then a plan is formulated. That is, for somebody like me, that's a recipe for disaster because my brain isn't wired that way. That's harder for me. So there's those who learn by listening. There's those who learn by speaking. And sometimes that's like repeating the plan back. There's people who learn by physical touch, touching the swatches, touching their own hair to understand what length you're talking about, touching your comb. Like it's crazy. Those who learn by touch, they just need to be tactile to retain the information that's being shared, to understand the conversation. That's the kind of client where you just putting a hand on their shoulder is going to allow them to resonate deeper with you. And then there's those who learn by seeing. So those who are visual learners, they're the ones that need to flip through 500 pages in a magazine. You need to ask them a million questions about why they like this blonde. How come they don't like this red? Show me, look at these two pictures, which one's warm, which one's cool. Now the catch is you can't just say, oh, Eric, you know what? I think that you are a visual learner, so I'm going to consult with you visually. Right. If we're doing good consultation, you got to hit them all and you got to hit them hard. So it's that you have to talk to them. You have to listen. There has to be a physical touch component. There has to be a visual component. We have to do all of it to ensure that the guest actually knows what's up. And when I talk about redos, in my opinion, unpopular opinion, every redo is the fault of the stylist. Either you never should have done the person's hair in the first place because it wasn't a good fit for you, or you failed in consultation. You didn't get on the same page with the guest. And we say things like, well, the client wasn't listening. Okay, so then why did you do their hair? You have to make sure that you get that consultation right so that you're both walking away with what you need. The other thing I'm a fan of is the consultation pre-service. And then there should be another consultation post-service. Like once you've done the cut and color, especially if it's a change, to say things like, okay, so tell me, what is your favorite part of what we've done today? What are the things that you're noticing as a change and how does it make you feel? Like consult on the way in and almost like decompress, consult on the way out. Doing things like that help to reduce your redos and increase your referrals dramatically.
Very interesting. I've never had a conversation about a post consultation. I think I would have told anybody that I've had a conversation about it all. But yep. I've never had a conversation about the post consultation. And I think it's brilliant. Of course, people listening are like, wait, are you kidding me? I've got somebody waiting. I took too long because Janice was late. And somebody's yelling at me, Elsa, you expect me to do a post-consultation?
If you don't want to do a redo, I do. And if you want to get referrals, I do. Into exactly what you're saying. Okay, can we just like segue right into number three of what I'd want to share?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so another thing that we talk about in Thriver Society is what I call the margin for magic. So many of us, myself included, we love to book our lives in a way where there's no room for error, there's no room to breathe. If one thing goes wrong, the entire tower falls. And we do it because we think that that's how we're maximizing our time or maximizing our potential or whatever. When we take a look back, mostly what it's doing is maximizing stress. Because to what you said, as soon as you're running late, you're running long, there's another client breathing down your neck, post-consultation, I barely made it through this blowout. What are you talking about? So what if instead of booking ourselves that way, we left more room to really serve our guests to our highest? For me, and what I've seen through Thriver Society and the 10,000 plus people who have gone through it, is actually if you slow down, you pour more into every person who sits in your chair, and you optimize the potential of each guest, you'll earn more, be less stressed out, see more referrals, your business will grow faster. So instead of feeling like the game is get as much done as quickly as possible, it's pour all into those who are there. You'll find that when you create that margin for magic, which for me is often extending your service times so that, Eric, you have time to do things like take photos of your clients. You've heard this before too. I would take pictures of my guests, but I don't have the time. Okay, so what are you going to do about it? You can't just be victim of, I don't have the time to take the photo. We got to make the time. So if you give yourself an extra 15 minutes at each service so that you can do a post-consult, so that you can take amazing photos of your guests, so that you can sit with Sheila at the retail shelf and be like, listen, which of these thermal protectants have you tried? Let's test this out. Actually, I want to spray this hairspray into your hand. I want you to feel the tackiness of this. If you give yourself a second to slow down, oh my gosh, what it will do for your business and your sanity is so massive. So creating that space to do these next level things, I mean, that's that next level hairstylist stuff. The hair factory stuff, to me, we're going to see a massive phase out of that because consumers today expect such a higher quality visit when they're with you.
Absolutely. And of course, these conversations oftentimes develop themes. And here we go with another one. It's the quality versus the quantity, right? Similar to last week when we were talking about your marketing, when you were going to the college and we would pass out 100 little sets of mini shampoo and conditioner, but you got zero effectiveness from it. Nobody came in versus just connecting with 8 people. You get 5 of them to come in because you spent time talking about their hair. This is very similar, isn't it?
Very, completely. That high touch, that actually making the connection, that I care about you. You're not just my 4 p.m. on Wednesdays. Like I care for you and I want you to care for me too. Like I want this to be a mutual. That is relationship building, you guys. Like if we want our guests to send us referrals, stay loyal to us and be in it for the long haul, we've got to pour into that relationship. Healthy relationship goes both ways.
And your margin for magic, are we talking about an additional 15 minutes per client? Are we talking about additional 30? Or are you just going to leave it up to everybody in their own situation?
I'm going to leave it up to everybody. And that's the thing is I don't think the margin has to be massive. I think everybody books differently. For some of you, you could add on an extra 5 and it's plenty, an extra 10. Yep. I know a lot of us book on the 15. So if, I think 15 is a pretty good place to start. And listen, worst case scenario, you have a little bit of time left over to grab a snack before your next guest. But it's amazing. We give ourselves a little bit of breathing room. It is incredible the impact it'll have on your business.
Absolutely. Okay. Number, we've done 3, target market, consultation, pre and post, and margin of magic. Margin 4 magic. What's number 4?
Number 4, I'm going to say is kind of the entire social media section of the program. So again, consumer behavior has changed radically in recent years. So I think that the number 1 platform for hairstylists is probably the gram. It seems like the place where everybody is. And I'd argue that too. Over 90% of our industry shows up on Instagram at least sometime during the month. Clients are finding stylists there for sure. However, it's not the platform for everybody. And depending on what you're looking to build, what you're looking to do, where you live, there may even be better places for you. So when we look at platforms like, I'm going to say it, the Yelp word, I know Yelp is sometimes like public enemy number 1. I totally get it. But the cool thing about programs, I consider social media, Google My Business and Yelp, which are essentially digital platforms where people are sharing photos and having online conversations. It's the same as any other social media platform. Mm-hmm. When we look at platforms like that, the advantage to using those two specifically is A, they play nice in SEO. So if we want to be featured at the top page in Google search, when I search for best salon in Minneapolis, if you want to show up, that's a Google My Business listing index. It's not keyword stuffing. It's not having 100,000 followers on Instagram. That's going to be the way that you do it. And it's short-sighted to think, well, everyone's going to find me on Instagram. No, they're not. They're going to find you wherever they are looking. So Google My Business and Yelp are both indexed very high in location search. The other thing is, too, they're really easy platforms. So the problem with it, well, not the problem. The work involved in showing up on platforms like TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, anything like that, we know that you got to be there consistently, if not daily, several times a week. With Google My Business and Yelp, you could show up once a week. There is a maintenance component, which is another thing people don't understand. Once a week, and if you do it right, and when I say do it right, I don't mean running paid ads. I don't mean it has to cost a ton of money. If you do it right, it is the easiest form of social media you'll use. There's a good chunk of thrivers who basically don't post anywhere else anymore and just go all in on Yelp and Google My Business and have built faster and easier than ever before because of the way that the internet respects both of those platforms. Then when we look at platforms like TikTok, Pinterest, I love both. The challenge with apps like that is that they're not optimized for local small business openly. Both platforms will say that. And so what we talk about in Thriver Society is respecting all the platforms, but knowing where your money shot is, like where are you going to get the biggest bang for your buck? I don't want you to have to show up and nurture 9 platforms. I don't want to do that. I don't want you to do that either. It's about finding where your target market guests live and showing up there in the right way to make your life as easy as possible and be seen by as many guests as we can every single week.
Love it. I have nothing to say or add.
Oh, I love that.
For the first time in the 201 episodes of this, I have nothing to add. Brilliant. Number 5.
Number 5 is, this is a personal favorite. And again, it's one that has some controversy, but I love it because it's really transformational. I have a module in there where it's called Retail Therapy. And we talk about the benefits and easy ways to sell retail in the salon. Now, I know for a lot of us, retail is a pain point. There's certainly, the retail game has changed so tremendously, even in the last 5 years and certainly longer. However, we look at different ways to encourage retail purchases from our clients. And what we find is that retail not only creates revenue, but it also increases retention and referrals. Because the more anybody is reliant on your business to meet their hair needs, the more likely they are to stick with you, send their friends to you, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of times we think, okay, well, if I'm going to recommend a retail product, they're just going to go buy it on Amazon, or they're going to pop over to Ulta after their visit. Well, if they're doing that, then we need to refine your technique, because the technique is not, first of all, I don't like a hard sell, so we're not hard selling at all, but we're creating like the FOMO factor. For me, I've noticed myself, like I've gone to get a massage or something, and then I'll walk out with a bag of products. Like, how the heck did that happen? I was there for a massage because the technician created so much urgency for me around, like, there's no time to waste. Let's do this. I felt connected to that person in a way where saving $6 on Amazon, I didn't even care. I was in it. I wanted it now. It's creating that. And the other thing that we talk about in retail therapy is often we get a bad taste in our mouth about retail because either there's no retail commission percentage paid to the stylist from the salon owner, which I'll be honest, I'm okay with that. I would like for stylists to be making a retail commission. I'm cool with it. But even if you weren't making a retail commission, there is still such tremendous benefit to making that retail sale that I want to encourage that because of all of the fringe benefits that come with it. But then what we talk about in the module two is how to ensure you have a profit margin, how to ensure that you're stocking the right retail that your clients even care about, the whole ideology behind what products go where. So we dive deep into kind of falling in love with retail again and what is possible when we offer that kind of holistic, well-rounded experience to our guests.
I'm glad you mentioned the fact that it's an amenity to your business. It's not a nuisance. So many people treat it like it's a nuisance that that they need to make their client endure because either their salon owner or, you know, maybe their husband is telling them, you know, them and their studio, you know, you could be selling more retail or whatever. Or if you look across, you know, the salon and you see another hairdresser in the studio and they're doing really well on retail, they think to themselves, oh, crap, I need to do well on my retail. But I hate burdening my client with this sales pitch. But it's not that, is it?
It's not that. And it's funny because we as beauty professionals know that. Like I only want to use high quality products on my hair because I know there's a massive difference. So we're cheating our clients when we're not sharing that wealth and knowledge with them. And there's 1,000 analogies about why would you buy a Porsche and then fill it up with, you know, vegetable oil, like you're gonna put premium gasoline in that thing. It's all of that same mindset for sure. But to what you said, it's not a burden to try and help your guest lifestyle. You are giving them a tremendous gift. And if we look at retail as educating and supporting instead of selling and an opportunity to make money. Or I've even heard stylists say, like, I'm ripping my clients off. Oh my goodness. Like that's a mindset shift, right?
Absolutely. What a benefit to your client to offer them the exact thing they need right there. So there's zero friction to the transaction. You know, Amazon, you know, we all like to assume that Amazon is the most convenient thing. And there is friction to Amazon. How many times have I gone on Amazon to buy? I like to talk about the example of me buying a rubber band. My wife was like, we need more rubber bands. So I go on to Amazon. And I'm like, oh, this is the most convenient way to buy rubber bands, right? I go on there and there's like 8 million different rubber bands.
Yes.
And I don't know, like 12 gauge, 10 gauge, 4 gauge, you know, 800 quantity, 400 quantity. Oh, this one over here gets good reviews. That one's battery. I mean, give me a break. And of course, it's similar with hair product. So what an advantage to have the client right there. They can get the product. And by the way, Amazon is not cheaper anymore. I don't know if you've noticed this. It used to be cheaper and they got all of the market share and it is no longer cheaper. There's pretty often I can find things cheaper on Walmart.com or other places or even in store than Amazon. So some of those advantages are gone. The hairdresser has the best context and environment to sell product to their clients, to the client's benefit.
Completely. And listen, if a guest says to you, if you're trying to sell retail and they say, oh, you know what, I'm going to write that down. I'm going to get it on Amazon. A lot of times we roll over and we're like, oh, okay, yeah, let me give that to you. No. That's your opportunity to say, wait a second, time out. I've got this right here for you right now. Tell me
Same price.
Same. Why would you make an additional stop and wait 2 days? Or like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense.
Yes. And it helps small business. Everybody is always like, yo, support small business. And then they want to save 47 cents maybe on Amazon. It's ridiculous. And then wait 3 days, right?
Right. Right.
There's a little bit of an education process to almost counteract a lot of the tremendous marketing that the e-commerce companies have done.
Completely. And it's tapping into that confidence we talked about last week of like, have the awkward conversation one time. Just interrupt your client one time and say, time out. Why are you going to Amazon? And you can even say it lighthearted like I am right now. You'll be amazed at the trust you build with your guests, the way your business shifts and changes. All those conversations are awkward the first time. But once you see, my gosh, that wasn't so hard. And she bought 3 bottles of retail today. Once you get those micro wins, it all becomes so much easier.
100%. Okay. We did target market branding. We did consultation pre and post, margin for magic, social media. We talked about retail therapy. Those are the 5 ones, all amazing, of course. One thing that I think people like us in our industry talk about a lot these days is pricing. And I want to hit on that a little bit because we're in a very interesting period of time. We, of course, talked about pricing pre-pandemic. But I think it's even gotten more interesting because now we're in an environment where there's a lot of money in society, a lot of stimulus going on, a lot of unemployment juice happening, yet and our industry got totally crushed. And at the same time, we have inflationary pressures across the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these dynamics are happening right now. And let's say you're a hairdresser and you're kind of trying to pick up the pieces of your business. Where are you on a pricing strategy?
I think that's a really good question. And you're right. It's interesting because pricing has gotten so much more complex. One of the things that we do in Thriver Society is we walk through a really formulaic way of pricing. It has nothing to do with your competitors or what level you're at. And it has nothing to do with that. It's very just A plus B equals C. It's based on facts and data. But one of the things that we've seen radically shift in the industry is that it's piece rate pricing or like per service pricing kind of dominated the industry forever, for a long time. You get a haircut, a root touch up, and a blowout. Great. So A plus B plus C equals the final price today. Now we're seeing pricing structure changes like a flat hourly. Like, listen, you sit in my chair for 2 hours, it's $300 no matter what we do. That's a pricing structure we're seeing changing big time. And then we're seeing something I call it block-based pricing, but you could call it session pricing or all-inclusive pricing. And then a pricing like that, it's like, listen, this is the package that you'll get. This is all it includes. It includes a treatment. It includes blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And this is the price for that. There are so many ways that you can choose to price yourself. And I think that the key is to A, understand your market really deeply. All of those pricing structures are fine. All of them will fail if used in the wrong market, all of them. And so it's about knowing your target market, knowing how to speak to them, knowing how to meet them in the middle, see them where they're at. As far as navigating things like price increases, you have to look at the key indicators. So I learned this to be true because I watched it go sideways in my own salon in front of my own eyes a couple of times. One of the most reckless things you can do in your business is raise your prices because it's time. Well, I'm going to raise my prices because it's been 2 years, or I'm going to raise my prices because I can't pay my car payment, which I empathize. Like, I want you to pay that car payment too. But the first part of getting your pricing right is getting your marketing right. There is just no shortcut to that, because until we have a consistent flow of clients demanding to see you, shaking up anything on the inside of your business can be really detrimental. Mm-hmm. It can cause a lot of unexpected pain. So for me, before we really adjust any pricing, I always say we need to get your target market and branding correctly so we know who we're looking to attract. We need to create a consistent stream of guests seeking out that service and choosing you as the provider. And then the doors open right up, because then we can do some restructuring. We can raise your prices. We can adjust some things. We could do something I call price balancing. There's a lot of different things that can happen. But if we don't have a flow of clients, it can be devastating. And the things that you do to try and increase money or create more peace in your life can end up being what causes a dramatic downfall. So getting kind of the ducks in a row for me is the first step in deciding what pricing structure is right, how to make that financial comeback, and then setting yourself up for long-term success.
What would you say is the biggest question you're getting asked from your students these days?
Just in general?
Yeah.
Biggest question.
I imagine there's an ebb and flow the interaction that you have with all of your students. And of course, now we're coming out of a very interesting time. Has kind of the most common question changed?
Yeah. You know why? Because I think that the mindset of beauty professionals has changed. Like, I'll keep it 100. In 2019 and previously, I was trying to sell something that not everybody was crazy about. Like, ugh, accounting, yuck. Working on marketing, ugh. It's like everything that I coach to sounds pretty heavy. And so it's hard to convince people who are working tirelessly behind the chair. They're already at maximum capacity. They got family, they have friends, they have a million other things they want to do. And now I'm like, yeah, come on down and spend a few hours in my program every month. Like, that's a hard sell. And I totally get it. While now, coming out of 2020, people are realizing, like, oh man, had I had a buffered savings account, had I had some of these pieces set up in place before 2020, my life could have been a little bit different. Like, 2020 was the year, myself included, we all realized, like, wow, things could change in a heartbeat. I'm changing the way I run my own business. Like, we had to really get real with ourselves and understand that there is no guarantee. I don't know about you. I used to call our industry recession proof because I was like, oh, everybody needs to get their hair done. No one can take us down. Well, a pandemic will get you. And so we learned really quickly that we need to get everything in gear to ensure that you have a plan B. Two years ago now, 2019, my husband had a really significant injury and I had to step away from my business for 4 weeks. Uh-oh. Like, we have to ask ourselves as stylists and salon owners, if you had to pull yourself out of your business today and be gone for 4 weeks, would it survive? And it's like having those safe proofs in place is so important. And so I'm getting a lot of questions, and I have been for probably the last year, about financial security and mindset is so big for people, of like, how do I do this? How do I stay in this? How do I find the wherewithal to like keep fighting the good fight even when times are bad? I get a lot of questions about that.
I love it. Well, look, you've been amazing. All of this information is tremendous. It looks like you've put together an amazing thing that to really, really support the industry, you know, one by one, right? I mean, our industry is an individual industry, and everybody does things maybe a little bit different according to what's best for them. And it sounds like Thriver Society really allows the customization on an individual basis. You didn't tell me to say that. That's just what I'm getting from you and what you've put together, and it sounds like you've dealt with so many people that you've kind of covered the bases.
And I think that's what it is. That's very humbling to hear you say, Eric, because that's what I strive for, is to meet people where they're at. I don't think I have all the answers. I don't think there's one way to live your biggest, best life. But if I can help people to see what their biggest, best life looks like and some tips and tricks to get there along the way, then I've done my job, and that's what I aspire to do.
Any last words for the community?
Last words for the community are that I still strongly believe we are the best industry with the most potential on the planet. It's an industry I am beyond proud and excited to be a part of. And know that by choosing this industry, you have chosen the industry where you truly can have it all. Money, time, love, health, abundance in all the ways. Seek out being that lifetime student. Remember what we talked about, to find that balance between input and output, and never let any bump in the road detour you from chasing all your biggest dreams.
I love it. You're Britt Seva, B-R-I-T-T, two T's.
Yes, sir.
S-E-V-A on Instagram, same on the .com worldwide interweb, and ThriverSociety.com also on the internet. Thank you so much, Britt. It was awesome. Awesome conversation.
Eric, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey guys, before we wrap up the episode, I want to ask you, what do you want to hear from us in the next 200 episodes? This is episode 201. And I fully expect that we're going to be doing another 200 episodes. So we want to hear from you. What topics do you want to hear? What guests do you want to hear from? Leave a comment, suggestions, questions, anything you want in a review on Apple iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. This will also get you entered into the weekly Podloot giveaway. Speaking of Podloot giveaways, next week will be a Babyliss Pro Nano Titanium Plated Ionic Straightening Iron. For a chance to win it, write a review on the Apple Podcast app. The review has to include your exact Instagram handle. That's how we know who you are. Make sure you're following the Hair Game Podcast on Instagram and me, Love Eric Taylor, as well. And then I put your name in my bag. Each week, Donovan pulls a name, and I announce the winner at the beginning of every episode. You have to be listening to win, so you can DM me the mailing address so we can send you things like the iron. If you don't win, keep listening, because your name stays in the bag. You can win any week on any episode. For complete details, go to salonrepublic.com. Next week's episode will be with Don Bradley. Until then, have a great week.